captivating story of hospitality we have in today's first reading from the book of Genesis. 99-year-old Abraham and his lovely 89-year-old bride, Sarah, sit at home, patiently bearing up under the searing heat of the Hebron Valley. Suddenly, out of the blue, Abraham is startled by the appearance of three strangers slowly making their way toward his tent. His first reaction must have been one of frightful alarm. It was noon, after all, the hottest part of the day. No one in their right mind ventures forth at that hour. As Noel Coward Riley pointed out, only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. Who then were these foreigners defying death in the desert heat? We'll find out soon enough. But in the meantime, let's pause and savor the moment as we watch Abraham leap into action. He does not even wait for the strangers to arrive. He runs to them. He greets them. He implores them to interrupt their journey and to refresh themselves at his little domestic oasis. His open-hearted hospitality to these strangers knows no bounds. He brings water to bathe their feet, a much appreciated comfort for the travelers with their rough sandals and the irritating dust of the road. He invites them to rest under the shady terebinth tree. And although he promises to fetch some little morsel of food, instead he and Sarah prepare a lavish banquet for them. The Jewish Talmud remarks, "Such is the way of the righteous. They promise little, but they perform much." In asking Sarah to bake some bread, Abraham specifies that she use the finest flour, the kind reserved for the wheat cakes offered to God at the sanctuary. Meanwhile, Abraham himself carefully picks out a calf, tender and choice, for the main dish, a rare delicacy and a sign of his unstinting hospitality. Then, as if he had not done enough already, Abraham personally serves the strangers the rich fare, and he lingers close by, ready to respond to their slightest whim. Abraham's gracious hospitality certainly makes for a charming story, doesn't it? It's no wonder that the Jewish people preserve this account in their scriptures. But they preserve that story not simply to warm our hearts. The story of Abraham's encounter with the strangers, messengers from God, as it turns out, packs a prophetic punch as well. We Christians would do well to pay attention to this lesson. After all, remember that 1,000 years after Abraham, Jesus repeated this very same message, though more starkly and more negatively. Jesus said, "Depart from me, you accursed, for I was a stranger and you did not welcome me." My brothers and sisters, these readings challenge us to examine our hearts and to consider our behavior, not simply as individuals, but more importantly, as a nation. Daily, we witness the soul-crushing plight of hundreds of refugees who appear at our nation's doorstep. And what kind of reception do they receive? Heartwarming words of welcome? Food, clothing, and shelter in this country so exceedingly blessed by God? Lamentably not. In fact, far from it. Like Abraham, our initial reaction is frightful alarm. Unlike Abraham, however, we never work through our fear so that we can spring into action to welcome the stranger. But it is to our peril that we disregard that early Christian maxim, hospes venit, Christus venit, When the guest comes, it's Christ who comes. As a nation, we stand by and watch as terrified children are ripped from the arms of their anguished mothers and fathers. We read of scores of migrants who perish of thirst in the desert while Border Patrol agents mercilessly slash jugs of water left for them by caring modern-day Abraham. These same federal agents then have the temerity to charge the Good Samaritans with littering on government property. And we shake our heads in bewilderment as we watch some of our national leaders visit the refugees who have succeeded in crossing the border, but are caged in unsanitary, overcrowded detention centers. These leaders are repelled by the stench and the squalor, but still they walk away proclaiming, "This may seem harsh, but we are comforted knowing that what we are doing is the right thing." My sisters and brothers, would that Abraham would return today to Texas and Arizona to offer some minuscule gesture of compassion to these pitiless refugees. Would that Sarah would come back to refresh them with some comforting food and warm embrace. Would that God would send among us once again Micah and Miriam and Hosea and the other prophets, especially here to our nation's capital, so that they might rouse us from our complacency, crying, for shame, America. But wait a moment. You are Abraham. I am Sarah. You and I are called by our baptismal anointing to proclaim to refugees and migrants, "You are my sister, and I welcome you. You are my brother. Let me bathe your feet and have you recline in the shade of my tree. Let me offer you some morsel of food." You and I are Miriam and Micah and Hosea. It is for us to reproach our leaders. For shame. This is not who we are. This is not who we want to be. Last Thursday, hundreds of Catholics gathered on Capitol Hill in the sweltering heat to express their disgust at our government's treatment of immigrant children and to demand an end to child detention. I'm proud to say that 20 Holy Trinity parishioners were part of that group. On behalf of our parish, I thank these Miriams, Micahs, and Hoseas who represent us. But more needs to be done. Unfortunately, none of us has all the answers. There is no omniscient scout to guide us through this prickly thicket of national security concerns and humanitarian challenges. Nevertheless, we cannot stand idly by. May I make a request? I ask that each of you spend 3 minutes in prayer each day for the next week. Just 21 minutes total. That's not much. But such is the way of the righteous. They promise little and they perform much. In those 3 minutes of prayer, ask God for two things. First, that soon we find a new social justice coordinator for our parish. Someone with boldness and vision who, continuing the fine leadership of Kate Trumbull, can marshal this parish's myriad talents and resources on behalf of justice. And then secondly, ask God to help us to discern how we as a parish might respond to this crisis. I'm afraid this has to be the work of you, the laity. Our bishops and we priests seem to have lost our way on this matter. After your 21 minutes of prayer this week, send us a note, an email, or a text, and let us know how God has inspired you. Tell us how you think our parish might best move forward. Are you willing to do at least that much for the stranger among us? I hope so.